Welcome to the Atom Ventures podcast. My name is Bhairav Patel. I'm the co-founder CEO of Atom Ventures. And today I'm excited to have Rich Ruskoff, coach to the best, with me today. How are you doing, Richard?
I'm doing terrific, all things considered, in this crazy world.
Yeah, it's
right
crazy,
now.
Crazy times indeed. So, Rich, you've been a coach for over 36 years. So can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you started and got into coaching?
Yes. I'm a third generation entrepreneur. And I started my first business on the Outer Banks of North Carolina in 1973. And I ran that business for 10 years. And I learned so much about being a business owner. I learned, first of all, that it was more important to be respected than to be loved. I learned how to manage and monitor money. I learned how to hire the best people and to manage them. And I learned that the importance of having a coach, which I did not, and understanding more about what I was getting into, I learned along the way. It was a wonderful ride. So I sold the business in 1982. And after I sold it, I took 3.5 months off and went to Europe, my first stop being London, and was thinking about what I wanted to do next, because I see life as a journey, as chapters, and as paths. And I was interested in the dynamics of how businesses changed hands. So when I came back, I joined a franchise called VR Business Brokers in Richmond, Virginia. And my goal was to learn as much as I could about the dynamics of how businesses changed hands. And there were no real superstars that were brokering businesses at that time. And I was doing more business sales than anyone in the network. So I did a presentation on it at a convention, and the franchisor said, "Would you go around the country and teach other business brokers how to do it right, and also coach the owners of the franchise?" So that was the first time I ever did workshops and I ever did coaching. And I found that it was something I loved to do. And that led me to go out on my own and start coaching in 1986. And I was very fortunate to create a relationship with Inc. Magazine. And Inc. Magazine, I was their senior coach, and they had business opportunities, entrepreneurs for me to coach all over the country. And that was wonderful. It opened so many doors for me. It opened the doors for the Entrepreneurs Organization Network, where I've been speaking and coaching for years. And there are chapters in England, and there are 10,000 members all over the world. So while I was at Inc., I learned so much. We studied the companies that made the Inc. 500 list. And we found that 18 to 20% were out of business within 2 years of making the list. High growth is high risk. So we studied why they didn't make it. And it wasn't the capital. It wasn't the industry they were in. It was the critical decisions that entrepreneurs make at each stage of growth. What gets you to one level will not get you to the next level, and you have to reinvent yourself. A startup company, everybody's doing everything, everyone's happy, and it has creativity. Once you grow beyond 10 to 25 people, it becomes really exciting. You start hiring more people, departments emerge, and you're on your way. Then you get to 25 to 50, if you make it there, and you become in purgatory. And what used to work no longer works. And the mantra that everybody does everything will kill you at that point. because you need people to specialize and to focus on what they do best, to take responsibility and accountability. You can only do that for one thing. So the leader has to grow, and that means growing systems, growing processes, because it's not just a question of scaling at that point. It's a question of recreating.
So I think that I'm going to apologize in advance, because I have a feeling that we're going to go off tangent to a lot of questions I thought I was going to ask you. And I think just even through that initial introduction, there's a whole bunch of questions that for me come out of that. Firstly, you've been your experience since 86, you've been coaching. So have you seen the fundamentals of business change over that period of time? Obviously, we've had like the dot-com boom, we've had the financial crash, we've had a lot of different episodes in the last 20 or 30 years, right? Have you seen the fundamentals change?
Okay, so if you define fundamentals by you're in the hiring, requiring, inspiring, firing, communicating, and training business, that has not changed. If you're talking about the fundamentals of the leader, starting off with the visionary, who then leads by bringing the right team together, who then is able to give that team what they want, who listens for feedback, who understands the basic financials of their business, and who focuses on results and execution, that doesn't change. What changes is the marketplace and what the market wants. And a savvy entrepreneur adjusts to the changes in the marketplace and spots trends and assesses what they're doing, what's working, what's not working, and is agile enough to make the changes so they remain viable.
So a lot of this resonates with me simply because the group of companies that we work with as Atom Ventures, we provide technology advice to small businesses and startups, and we take them from the pre-seed to seed to Series A. And in many ways, you know, that's one way of labeling growth of a company, but another way is obviously employee size. But there is a certain maturity and organizational growth that comes along with having more money in the business. And what we try to do is lay a framework for them so that as they hit the next stage, it's not going to be too much of a shell shock for people within the organizations to adapt to it. But one thing I do see with some of the entrepreneurs that we work with is their ability to adapt with the times. So how much do you feel that the person who starts the company should carry on past a certain growth level? Do you feel that it's something that, you know, once you realize you hit your limit, you go, or do you try and find additional skills to push on?
A friend of mine by the name of Randy Nelson, who was one of the first people I've coached, wrote a book called The Second Decision. And the second decision is, should you be the CEO? Should you be the entrepreneur? And in many cases, you shouldn't be, because you don't have the skills and the expertise. And that's when you either bring somebody else in that can do it, or make sure you're focusing on what you do best and work on your business and not in your business. And if you don't know how to delegate, when we're talking about the fundamentals, if you can't delegate, then you can't grow, you can't scale. And if you're a one-trick pony and you only have one idea and you can't change and adapt to the marketplace, then if you do keep the role of CEO, it's important to develop a relationship with coaches, with advisors, and even for a small business to have a board of directors to challenge you in your decisions.
No, and I completely agree with that. I think a lot of the companies that we work with, we try to get them to act as a sounding board, or we try to ensure that they have someone around them that can be that sounding board. So let's go into one of the questions I wanted to ask you, and that's around today's environment. Now, we've got a lot of people who will be receiving redundancy checks, unfortunately, but they'll be wanting to do stuff with that. So they may want to start their own business. So just kind of on that theme of what it takes to be a leader and takes to be an entrepreneur, what you know, what would you say to someone who's looking to start their business now? What kind of person in this environment that we're in, which could be pretty crazy going forwards, you know, what kind of traits should do you think they should have?
First of all, know your do your homework. Really go deep into the trends of the marketplace. Read industry reports. Find out as much as you can about various industries. Consider buying an ongoing business rather than starting one, because there is so much that a viable business that exists today has already paid their dues for. And if you're looking to start up a business, you really need a vision that you believe can work in today's marketplace. There are great many opportunities today. Every situation, every environment creates opportunities and closes doors as well. So you want to be looking for what those opportunities are. For example, who would have thought? Well, let me give you an example of the evolution of a company. Let's take a look at Netflix. Netflix started because they looked at a marketplace where people were getting videos that they went to the store and picked out. But what they didn't like was that there were late fees. So Netflix started sending you movies. You keep them as long as you want. And then when you send them back, we give you another movie. And then they decided to go from there into streaming. And when they first did the streaming, their customers that were getting their videos by mail were saying, "What are you doing to us?" But the streaming was a game changer for them. So they bought more and more types of movies. Then they started creating their own. Now they're working with major directors and Hollywood stars and creating movies that go first to the cinema when we can go again, and then they're showing them on Netflix. So what the entrepreneur has done there is he has grown and changed as the marketplace has changed, and he's been the leader of that change. So that's what you want to be able to do. So I don't know if I quite answered your question.
No, you did. I think Netflix is a great example of a company that's used data as well to understand their customer base, and then when they've understood their customer base, launching a new product based off the data that they accumulated, which I think is a very good trait, obviously, for any
business. The way to say that is, great entrepreneurs are not problem solvers. They don't fix the past. They create the future. Go ahead.
No. Sorry. I was going to say, because that's a grand vision. And I think a lot of people hearing that will feel a bit intimidated by that. So, you know, would they need a grand vision, or is it just something that they feel that works within their environment? They see a gap in the market. There's a fit for whatever they're trying to sell. Do they need to start on such a high, kind of high hopes, high intentions?
Well, a vision doesn't have to be grandiose to be the right vision. But if you're an entrepreneur and you don't have a vision, you're not going to be able to sell your dream or your ideas to investors, to stakeholders, to customers, to employees that you want. Your vision is, why are you doing it? What's your purpose? Who do you serve? What's your unique competitive advantage? Where is your niche within the marketplace? I love companies that have clarity on who their customer is, and they serve those customers. And by listening to your customers, by talking to them, by getting in front of them, that's where you get your vision, your next creativity. What are you looking for? What do you need? What's holding you up at night? What are other services and products that we can offer? And that's how you continue to be the visionary for your company.
So let's say I'm a person, I've got an idea, I've got a vision, a clear vision of what I want to do. I have a little bit of money in my pocket. How do I, you know, going back to, I guess, a couple of steps to my original question, how do I know that I've got what it takes to actually run a successful business, to get it off the ground? What are the key traits you see in a person who can take a business from zero to 20?
Well, first of all, entrepreneurs are mavericks. And I'm speaking in general terms. They believe in themselves. They are lifetime learners. They are good listeners, and they adapt quickly. The mantra is fail fast and fail forward. You are going to fail. You are going to learn as you grow, and you have to have tenacity and resilience in order to do that. So also you have to have a sense of urgency, and you have to be, I would say the number one thing is a relationship builder, because you need to establish relationships with your clients, with financial institutions, with the people that work with you, with strategic relationships, with your vendors. That's how you grow. And you need to have values that your people understand, and a clear understanding of the financial numbers and how they work. If you have a fear of financials and you don't overcome them, then your learning curve will not take you to your earning curve, where you're actually at the point of break even and then to profitability. And you're opportunity aware.
Yes, so there's a lot in there. And I think also, you know, I guess one thing I'd add to that is opportunity aware, but also being reactive, but not knee-jerk reaction, right? So being reactive to the marketplace, but not panicking if something doesn't go right.
Yes. And there's a fine line there between, first of all, if you're panicking, what it means is you don't know what ready, set, aim is. You're fire, set, ready. And those entrepreneurs die quickly because they're operating strictly on emotion.
Yeah.
And they're not looking at the facts. And they may also be in denial. And if you're in denial, you're going to go under. It's a very heartless thing, a business. You either do it right, or it won't work. You can't survive long if you're not making good decisions. The flip side of that is you have to be decisive. And that's the great test.
So this, you raised an interesting point there. So we're making good decisions. How do you know that you've made a good decision? Is it all about profitability? Is it all about the numbers? Or are there any other kind of measurements you can make to understand whether you're actually going in the right direction?
Well, there's a great story about the CEO of Walmart who went into one of his stores, and there was an elderly person there greeting people as they came in. He loved it. He'd not seen that. And he went back and he said to his team, I want to do this in all my stores. And he was told by his financial people, we can't afford that. Do you know how that'll impact the bottom line? And he said, I think it's the right thing to do. And he did it. And it worked. And it created, for a period of time, a sense of people greeting me, making me feel comfortable when I walk in the door and I spend money there. So sometimes you can't go just with a decision based on financials. You go with the decision that you think will play out over time and give you the return on investment. The other piece is, if it's the wrong decision, don't be stuck in the sand with it. Get out and go on to something else. A good CEO makes 50 decisions in a day. They're not all good decisions, and they can't be. No one's that good. But you learn from it, and then the other thing you do is, let's go back to the fundamentals. Who are we? What do we believe in? What drives our business? And if your decisions don't tie into that, then you shouldn't make them. When your values are clear, your decisions are easy.
I think it's a very strong point that you make there, and I very much agree, because I think a lot of times I see businesses making decisions that, and they're not aligning them with their core vision. And really, they need to be. So that's a great example. The Walmart example is a great one, where it aligns. Okay, it's a costly decision, but it aligns with the vision, right? Of having a store where people can come in and will spend money, but also feel comfortable about doing it.
And so I'll give you two other examples that will resonate. Southwest Airlines focuses on being the low-cost carrier. Not always the cheapest, but always the low-cost carrier. And as they grew, they started doing longer flights and multiple flights. And one day a marketing person came in to the CEO, Herb Kelleher, and said, "Herb, I think we should start serving food. There, you know, with the longer flights, some people are asking for food." And Herb said to her, "And how will that make us the low-cost carrier?" End of discussion. Because it wasn't focused. And when Steve Jobs made the first cell phone, and people said, "Steve, we can do so much more if we just make the phone bigger," he said, "No, it has to fit in the pocket. We can't put anything in that isn't that size. Figure out how to do it in the size of the phone, or we don't do it." So that's a CEO's vision. That's a CEO holding their team accountable to what their core values are and what works for their unique competitive advantage.
So if we say, okay, so this is all golden advice. I think, let's say we're a person who's come in, listen to this advice and said, okay, great, I want to start my business now. And they've gone on, they're 1 year, 2 year in, and now they're beginning to grow. What are the key aspects of change within that leader do you see are necessary as you go beyond, let's say, the 0 to 20 and then 20 to 100 employees, larger turnover? What are the key things that you think that are necessary for that person to have?
Numeral uno, you cannot grow without great people. Hire the best, fire the pest. Jim Collins wrote a book called Good to Great. And what he said is, great people are worth three times more than good. Good is the enemy of great. In every key position, you need great people. As you grow on the financial side, you may go from a bookkeeper to a controller to a general financial manager to a CFO. That's a key position. As you grow, if you're growing, you need to work on your business, not in your business, which means you have to have a strong operations person who handles the day-to-day. You need a great sales and marketing team, and you need an administrative assistant, someone who keeps your promises, keeps you out of the thick of thin stuff, keeps your calendar, and keeps you on target. So it's, you need the best financial person you can, the best day-to-day operations person, an administrative assistant, the best financial people you can have, and also sales and marketing.
So,
and an HR person, excuse me, hire the best.
So let's can we put a little bit of context around best? Because I think when people, you know, I definitely understand what you mean in getting the right people for an organization. But when people talk about best, it's a very relative thing. So is it kind of an objective way you can?
From an objective point of view, they're self-start. Well, let me take you through the stages. One, you want an A player. What is an A player? An A player is somebody that does the job well. They can specialize in that job. You can depend on them, and they can meet the values of the company. Next phase, you want an A player who plays well with others. Yeah. And if they don't play well with others, they can be disruptive to your whole culture. Then next stage, you want someone who, if you can give them and say, this is the plan, this is what we need, and they can manage it. They can't create it, but they can manage it. So as we go up the scale, the talent that can handle those are rarer and rarer. Then you look for a person that not only can follow directions and manage people, but then can create and run the whole department. They're even rarer. And then ultimately, the CEO is someone who has the vision, makes sure execution occurs, and has a combination of humility and also a commitment to making sure they meet the expectations, set the values, set the standards, and drive the company towards getting the results. So first of all, if you don't have an A player in every position, I say to you why. An A player does the job well. They're a specialist in it. And you'll know who they are. And if you hire somebody and 90 days later you ask the question, would I hire them again? If the answer is no, let them go. Hire slow, hire fast.
I guess the, sorry to interrupt, but I guess the reason people would say they don't hire the best is because it just comes down to money. They say, I can't afford the best. So what would you say to that?
There's two ways to look at that. One, you might be penny wise and dollar foolish. Two, you hire the best that you can afford at whatever price level you can. The talent and the quality is out there. And the hiring process is the key to getting the right people. Then you train them. Then you say, this is the way we do business. And they either rise to the occasion or they don't. And if they don't, you let them go and find someone else at that pay level that you are. There's always better talent and worse talent.
So one thing that this all brings up, which I find very interesting, is team versus individual. So if you look at the way that entrepreneurship is spoken about today, it's very much a cult of the individual, right? So we talk about the Elon Musks of the world. We worship the billionaires, and we worship the people at the top, the Zuckerbergs or whoever it is. But that's not necessarily, I mean, they weren't the individuals that built the entire company, right? There was a team around them. So how much do you think, you know, to be successful, you need to subsume your ego, or can you just be a Musk and go out there and you know, just be the most amazing at everything?
Well, a Musk didn't do it on his own, and no great CEO has done it on its own. There's no CEO that is great with the money, great with the marketing vision, and great with the leadership. So you need other people to work. If you read Sir Richard Branson's book, he doesn't talk about me. He talks about we. He talks about building with great people, and he believes it should be fun. And there's a great saying, when the work is fun, the work gets done. So I think there's some myths out there about mavericks who do it on their own. If you go back to Rockefeller had a great team of people working with him that were his leaders, and he met with them at lunch every day. Because here's the other thing that's so important here. It's alignment. And success is 1% vision, 99% alignment.
Okay, so moving on a little bit, let's talk a bit about, so we've talked about, you know, building a company, building the team around you. So one of the kind of topics I wanted to talk to you about was around profitability and building a profitable business and the foundations of them. Now, in this day and age, everyone is very much, it's the funding life cycle, right? You need to grow, get the funding to in order to boost the growth, etc. But in order to do that, you need to show revenue. And obviously, there's many, many companies out there that haven't been profitable for a while. Now, how important is it to build that profitable business?
Well, first of all, so if I understand your question right.
Yeah, let me rephrase that slightly because I realized I kind of just pushed it out there. But so I think in the modern era, right, we have a number of companies who, that like there's two types. One set will say, okay, I need to build a business slowly, steadily, and I want to make it profitable early on, and then use those profits to push back into the business and grow. And then there's others who will just fire out lots of marketing and will not even look at being profitable for a number of years. And those are two both valid strategies, I guess. But for most entrepreneurs, it you know, there's almost a little bit of a middle ground, right? You'll need investment to grow, but you need to actually have some money to make for yourself to survive. So I
absolutely.
So then the question really, I guess, is the, when you are a new person starting a business, what should you really be thinking about with regards to profitability? What is important there? Is it that we need to create a business that is, you know, making huge amounts of money at a very low cost and really kind of look at chasing growth or very tight scales? Or should you give yourself some freedom to say, okay, I'm going to make a loss for 2 to 3 years. Let's not worry about it. Are there kind of different mindsets that play in there and different, I guess, outcomes that come from those?
So here's how I would answer that. There's the burn rate is what you're talking about. Yes. Which is, how much can you afford to lose until you make money? What I find out, what I tell companies that are venture-backed, and I ask them, so what's your next step? And they say, oh, we're focusing on the second or third round of capital. I say, why don't you focus on the business model? Prove the business model. Take yourself from the learning curve to the earning curve. Where is your break even? Let's stop burning money, because money burned, you never get back. And that's very expensive money. And in the beginning, you may not know where you should be spending your money. So you can throw it away very quickly. And then money is the blood of a business, and you go under. That's why the average business in America is out of business within 18 months. So what is your break-even point? What is it you need to do to get there? So even if you've invested a lot of money in all the things you have to do for the startup, on a month-to-month basis, when do you start to cash flow positively? When do you pay all your expenses and show a profit to the bottom line? The sooner you get there, the more viable you are, the sooner you reach the point where financial institutions will invest in you.
So 18 months you mentioned there is a very short time for businesses to go about. So what are the main reasons for that?
Well, first of all, they have not really thought out their business plan. The business model has not ever been proven. They chose the wrong business. They don't know how to run a business. And let me answer it another way. When I was in business brokerage, we sold businesses to the buyers where the business was lemonade and they turned it into lemons. And we sold businesses that were lemons and the new buyer turned it into lemonade. And what I discovered was it wasn't the business. It was the manager. It was the owner. It was the critical decisions that they made along the path. High growth is high risk. And that's why so many high growth companies go out of business, because they have not factored in what it takes to get to that level. Better people, systems, technologies. And if you have a business where your monthly overhead is $1 million and you're bringing 5% to the bottom line, and then you're bringing 2%. 2% very quickly can turn into minus 2%. And if you're not paying attention, if you're not looking at that, if you're not asking yourself why, if you're not making the changes you have to make for profitability, you go broke. You can't pay your bills and you're gone.
Yeah, there's a lot of head in the sand type activities that go on in many businesses, right?
Yes, and I would say one of the fundamental failures is the fear of understanding your financials. Mm-hmm. And you should have financial advisors to give you percentages so you know the numbers. It's really about managing the margins and buying right and paying attention.
Why do you think businesses are so bad at that, though? Because obviously it is the lifeblood of a company, and cash flow is, in the UK, 50,000 businesses a year go bust because of cash flow. Not because they had bad businesses, it's because they didn't have the cash flow to sustain the business. So, and I've been in this for a number of years now trying to figure out why it is, and I still haven't put my finger on it. Is there anything that you can pinpoint as to why it is that people just ignore the numbers? Or just feel that someone else is dealing with it?
Well, you tend to play to your strengths. And there are just key things that you need to learn. How to read a financial statement. And understanding that the most important numbers are on your balance sheet. And now I'm getting around your question, but I'm going to get to it. The balance sheet is how you really keep score. Am I earning more to my bottom line, to my profitability, or am I losing money? And most entrepreneurs can't even read a balance sheet. They get it from their accountant, and they say, okay, that's like getting a vitamin pill. I'm not sure what it does, but I need to have it. So to get back to your question, it's not where my interest is.
But surely my interest, that's key there, right? That surely that is the key. If you're a business owner, then paying wages, making sure you have enough money, there's profit coming in. I mean, we started a business which was helping companies manage cash flow, and you could speak to business owners, and they realize they haven't actually even invoiced their customers for months or collected on the invoices. And to me, that's mind-boggling, because that's the basics, right? That's fundamental.
It absolutely. And if you're not paying attention to them, how do you keep score? How do you really know? And I'm working with an entrepreneur right now who's brilliant and in every way but the numbers. And right now, he can't get bank financing because no bank trusts his numbers. And To give you an example, are you familiar with Himalayan salt?
Yes.
The salt. So I went and I looked at his profit centers. And he sells salt lamps. And have you seen the Himalayan salt lamps?
No, well, but I've heard of them.
They're a salt lamp.
Yeah.
And they light up. And in theory, they give ions out. Very successful. I'm sure now that I've said it, you're going to see them.
Yeah.
So to have a salt lamp, you need the lamp itself. You need a bulb. You need a cord. You need a base. However, if you're selling bulk salt to somebody that once put Himalayan salt on potato chips, your profit is 95%. Your only cost over and above the salt is the canvas bag. Mm. Whereas with the lamp, you have all these components that you have to put together. So I'm looking at it and I'm saying, there's the sweet spot. There's the cash cow. Let's put our focus there. And if you're not paying attention to the numbers, you may not know that. When I started my first business, we had a bookkeeper who said, Rich, when you are on the floor of the retail business, it does more. It makes more money. And I didn't listen to her. I thought she was saying I was the best salesperson.
Right.
What she was really saying is, when I'm on the floor, they see me hustle and everybody else hustles and we make more money.
Right.
But I didn't listen. And finally, when I got it, I understood that was the highest and best use of my time during our busy times of the day.
Makes a lot of sense. Okay, so I realize time is running out and there's a lot of questions I want to ask, which we're not going to get to, unfortunately. But there is one question I always ask everyone on the podcast. And that is, if you could go back in time 20 years and give advice to your younger self, what would that advice be?
Well, if you don't mind, I may have to go back 40 years to answer that.
Sure.
Because I'm 75 years old. The first thing is I would have a coach. The second thing is I would, and I'll give you the whys to any of this, I would understand financials. I would not be, see, entrepreneurs believe the top line is everything. And the top line is for ego. The bottom line is how savvy entrepreneurs keep score. And it's not what you make, it's what you keep. I put a ton of money into leasehold improvements on a building. I should have bought a building because then when I sold, I would have had a building to sell as well as a business to sell. Mm. I would have learned that you make the money in your buying earlier, which means it's you look for the best buys in the marketplace, not necessarily what's new, and then that's what you offer the marketplace. So those are the key things I would say. And as I just pointed out with my bookkeeper telling me I should be on the floor more, be a better listener.
Yeah, I think there's a lot there. And I think the listening piece is very, very interesting because that's something I've touched on in other podcasts. It's how do you become one is always the hardest thing, right? How do you teach yourself to become a better listener? And I guess that's the key really for a lot of people.
Well, I do seminars on listening and I was working with a CEO and he used to just walk past people. And I said, Brett, listen to them, watch their body language, ask questions, follow up, shut up, let them speak. And he said to me about 3 months later, he said, I cannot believe how much I have learned from the people in my company who are on the job that see things that I don't because I give them the space. That's a wonderful way of learning what's going on in your business and building trust off on the side of the people that work with you. There's gold in them, their minds that are doing it.
Yeah. No, I mean, because when I was CTO of businesses, you know, I would sit on the main floor instead of sitting in an office. I'd definitely be in front of everyone so you could hear the conversations and understand where people are doing, so you can improve technology based on what they're actually doing on a day-to-day basis. And, but anyway, we've really run out of time now. Thanks a lot for that, Rich. It's been very, 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 very useful. How can people get in touch with you? Where are all your links and websites, etc.?
The best thing is rich@coachtothebest.com. That's all letters, CoachTheBest. And I'd be very happy to come back and cover the things we didn't at any time you'd like. This has been fun.
Excellent. Thanks a lot for that. It's been great.